Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. For decades, Native American museums have showcased our history while educating the masses about hundreds of tribal nations. At times, exhibits help clear up misunderstandings and provide a foundation for positive understanding of our stories. Have you ever wondered how museums decide on what to exhibit or display? In just a few, we'll talk with museum curators and directors and what they are bringing to visitors this season. We hope you can join us for this discussion right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Obama is kicking off a three-day visit to Alaska today to draw attention to the issue of climate change. Researchers say the Arctic is warming faster than elsewhere on the planet. As KMBA's Jocelyn Estes reports, Alaska Native issues are also on the president's agenda.
The president has scheduled a listening session with Alaska Native leaders to discuss climate change and economic issues. He's expected to announce a new initiative to help dozens of Native communities facing destruction by erosion and flooding due to the effects of climate change. President Obama will visit two predominantly Alaska Native communities off the road system. Dillingham is 53% Yupik and Kotzebue is 72% Inupiat. In Kotzebue, Obama will become the first sitting president to set foot in the Arctic. In recent days, the Obama administration has announced several initiatives to support Native interests in housing, youth leadership, and science education. Sunday, the Obama administration announced $375,000 in new funding for intertribal fish commissions for the Kuskokwim and Yukon rivers. The White House says President Obama also will announce a new official name for North America's tallest mountain. Mount McKinley will lose its 1800s-era name to become Denali, which means the Great One, in Koyukon, Athabascan. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
The president of the Navajo Nation has lifted restrictions on the San Juan River in New Mexico for some communities. Last week's move came after council leaders put forth a resolution asking that an emergency declaration be lifted for irrigation purposes. Irrigation was closed after the August 5th Gold King Mine waste spill. Restrictions are not lifted for livestock. Other farmers in the area, including in Shiprock, voted not to have irrigation turned back on. The City of Albuquerque's Native American Homeless Task Force released recommendations Friday. The group was created after beating deaths of two homeless Native Americans in the New Mexico City last year. Recommendations include cultural training for dozens of city employees. The Associated Press reports that was among requests by Pueblo governors. A community health worker has been named as a liaison to help address homelessness among Native people. And a $300,000 award will go to the First Nations Community Health Source for food, job training, and health care. A new partnership was launched this summer during a Native Writers Workshop for filmmakers. As Christine Trudeau reports, the Sundance Institute teamed up with the Institute of American Indian Arts Tribal College in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
This summer's workshop, held at the Institute of American Indian Arts campus, also known as IAIA, was a five-day skill-building intensive where six projects were selected from a nationwide application pool. The director of the Sundance Institute's Native American and Indigenous program, Bird Running Water, had been in talks with IAIA for some time to collaborate in an effort to foster the next generation of Native filmmakers.
I'm hoping that this idea of Native participation in film and storytelling and being writers and directors is starting to become something that's really embedded within our culture.
Running Water stresses that aspiring artists should know there are still many opportunities out there. Future plans for next year's summer workshop are still in the works, according to Running Water, who says moving forward with plans is largely dependent upon support through future funders. For National Native News, I'm Christine Trudeau.
A Canadian First Nations woman was crowned Mrs. Universe 2015 over the weekend. Ashley Collingbull took home the title during the competition in Eastern Europe. She's an actress, model, and motivational speaker from a Cree First Nation in Alberta. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
KNBA and Recover Alaska are seeking inspiring stories of recovery from alcohol addiction. If you or someone you know would like to share a story of recovery as part of an upcoming online and on-air documentary video project, go to knba.org and click Tell Your Story.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. It's time to spend a little time at the museum. Now, many of you have already rounded up your summer and are looking back at some of the photos of your great summer. Maybe even some of the most memorable photos in your pile or on your phone right now may be of you and your family visiting a new or favorite museum. And if you do have a fond memory of an exhibit you visited this summer, you can call in today and tell us about it. Our phone lines are open. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. And we want to know, what did you take away from what you saw or maybe had a chance to put some hands-on experience? Do you feel that the exhibit will help others understand more about our tribal nations? And today we'll also be visiting with a few new museum folks to get a heads up on what their museums have in store for curious minds. So get ready to fill your calendar up once again. And also, if there's an exhibit that you're looking forward to this fall or winter, you can tell us about it too. Perhaps this will be the first time people get to see your own artwork or your tribe story up close. The number to join us is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And kicking us off today on our museum roundup is Candace Hopkins. She's joining us from Santa Fe, New Mexico, and she is the chief curator at the Institute of American Indian Arts Museum of Contemporary Native Arts. And Candace is Tlingit. It's our pleasure to welcome her to the hour. Good day to you, Candace.
Thank you, Tara. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm really excited to tell you about what we have in store at the museum.
Great. And Candace, for folks who may be hearing about the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts for the first time, you're in a pretty special place. Let's talk about that first. You know, where do folks find you?
That's true. Well, we're a part of the Institute of American Indian Arts. And since 1992, the museum has been housed just off Santa Fe's historic plaza at 108 Cathedral Place across from St. Francis Cathedral.
And folks, you know, who make their trip there, you know, is definitely, you know, a place that's in the center of the action. And Candace, I want to go back a little bit. Santa Fe Indian Market just wrapped up, last week or, you know, a week ago. And a lot of people came to that area and the museum, you know, opened its doors to visitors and people who were, you know, just finding their way. And there were special things going on as you were welcoming not only visitors, but, you know, contemporary Native art. Candace, are there any highlights you'd like to share about, what took place during Indian Market this year there at the museum?
Sure. We always put a lot of emphasis on during Indian Market. It's when we get most of our visitors, and we also open the doors for free to everyone during that period. Native people, of course, can come for free at any time. We also do the bulk of our programming then. We were really excited this year to, for the first time in the museum's history, open a whole new wing. And the new wing is the new Lauren Key Family Gallery. And the gallery is focused on works from the permanent collection of the museum, which numbered just under 8,000 objects, and of which we have just under 50 objects on view right now.
And Candace, there is a very strong history of
the Institute's influence on art and even shaping, you know, the way we look at contemporary Native art today. Anything that you'd like to say about how what you're putting out or inviting people to this particular exhibit, is giving people a view into, I guess you could call it, the evolution of contemporary Native art. Tell me more about that.
That's true. We've been working and researching this exhibition actually for a relatively short period of time for a museum, just 3 months, because we received a great gift to go forward with the renovation. And so I was actually new to the museum. I've been there for just over a year, which meant that I had a lot of homework to do. So when I had the great fortune of going through work from the collections, first in our database and then looking at them in person where they're housed up at the campus, the Institute of American Indian Arts campus, what I was learning was really how both IAIA and the museum were really forged by these great visionary figures, including people like Lloyd Kivanu, who would be familiar to many of you. He was an artist as well as a fashion designer. He was a very cosmopolitan man. People like Fritz Scholder, who taught T.C. Cannon. So when I was looking through the collection, I was really struck by what I first saw was this real visionary nature, this interest in not only engaging with their own tribal nations, but really engaging with the world. And so what I wanted to do was to put that forward, to focus a lot of work on that early period in the 1960s, and then forward to through to today. And once again, what I found was I was seeing work that I hadn't seen in other parts of the world and other museums I've worked at, back in Canada primarily. And that was, I think, largely due to the real innovative nature and experimentation. I was seeing, Northwest Coast masks that were cast in ceramic by students who were exploring new materials. And I was seeing paintings of, these incredible ceremonial dancers. And I was also seeing, particularly in the 80s and 90s, artists who were engaging with issues of misrepresentation, also political action for members who were part of the American Indian movement, to a lot of artists today who are really thinking about how we can really shape and change the image and perception of what Native America is.
And Candace, your thoughts on making sure that, we understand, the changing face of, Native creativity. What about just understanding that, some of this contemporary work also reflects history? What can we learn about that aspect of things that are in the current collection?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question, because I think that actually what sets work by Native American artists apart from work by any other artist is the fact that it often is revisionist and that it's looking to tell a different story that hasn't been told within, history in general, as well as this very reflective nature. So one example would be a large photograph by Will Wilson called Autoimmune Response Number 2. And Will is Diné or Navajo. And where he placed his photograph is on top of the Grand Canyon, I believe on the Navajo Nation side, where he's wearing a gas mask. And in fact, one of the questions that came up in the opening was someone said, well, I didn't realize that the altitude was so high that you had to wear a gas mask. And what we said, in fact, was I don't think it's a commentary on that. I think it's a commentary on all the uranium mines that are still, not properly cleaned up. But with that, even though that's only going back to history in the 1950s, it is a characteristic of contemporary work to make this stretch back. The most recent work that's in the collection is by an artist, young Tlingit artist, Crystal Whirl from Alaska. And it's a series of three raven figures that are cast in glass. And of course, the story for us, creation story of how Raven brought the sun to a people, is well known. But she's creating an entirely new material, which I think is really exciting.
All right. Thanks for that. Today with us, we have Candace Hopkins, and she is the chief curator at the Institute of American Indian Arts Museum of Contemporary Native Art. She comes to us from the Tlingit Nation. She's telling us a little bit about what is happening inside their walls. You are also invited to join the conversation, too. Maybe you had a chance to truck through the museum and you have something to say about what you viewed, or maybe something that you learned about another Native nation. You can call in. The phone lines are open. We want to hear about museums that you've stepped into or maybe have plans to. You know, are there upcoming exhibits that you're really excited about? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. You can share the details and maybe even put out a phone number or a website. Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. And Candace, when you first walk into the museum, you're met by the gift shop there, which always has, you know, different Native art, sometimes by current students, as well as alumni. And it's always exciting to see just, you know, where people are taking Native art or how they're reflecting on their Native nations. And once you get through that, there is another part of the museum where you're seeing some very vibrant work. Tell me about the display once you start moving into the museum.
That's right. That's an exhibition that I've been working on for over a year now. It's called An Evening Redness in the West. And it includes a number of artists, some that are local, some as far away as Cape Dorset, which is Shubenacadie, Yukon, Canada, to Sitsipika, Rose B. Simpson from Santa Clara Pueblo, Virgil Ortiz, who was a guest on Native America Calling quite recently. And one of the first things you see actually is by a music ensemble called Death Convention Singers. So on the opening night, they created a procession. And during their procession, they started in our art park, and then they went to the historic plaza, and they went to Loretto Chapel. They went to St. Francis Cathedral and back. And really what they were trying to do, I think, was to talk about the history of missions relative to Native peoples. But because the exhibition really takes as its theme a kind of post-apocalyptic feel, one of the important objects for me on their cart and is now placed in the museum is a jug of water from the San Juan River as the Animas River flowed into it. So it's a jug of the polluted water. And I think the reason why it was so important to include that object in the exhibition is really because it talks about the challenges that we're facing right now in Native America, particularly on the Navajo Nation. And the water, it's quite extraordinary. It looks like it glows in the museum itself. And then a number of other objects in the exhibition really are incredibly beautiful. One is a beaded Iraqi gas mask done in floral beadwork by Naomi Bebo, who's based in Santa Fe, as well as another sculpture that she created called Woodland Child and Gas Mask. And really what I was interested in the exhibition was, you know, these things are coming out of hard times, but they're also incredibly beautiful. And I think it goes to show how traditionally, you know, we always adorned things and we always face these challenges with our traditions and our aesthetics fully intact.
All right. Thanks for that. And Candace, I did have a chance to catch, you know, the singers marching through Santa Fe. It was really interesting just to see their presence and, you know, people who were there on the plaza pause or just hear, you know, some of the sound coming through. Why is it also important, do you think, for just museums to make sure that they don't just keep it all locked in indoors, but are bringing some of that art outside of their walls to, you know, really create that dialogue that art can?
That's a great question. I think that museums are shifting towards thinking more about different ways that audiences can be engaged. And those audiences aren't just understood as to be being within the museum walls, but also outside the museum itself. And what we were trying to do in the lead up to Indian Market was show all of these diverse forms of creation, and one of those is sound and music. So for one of the first times in the museum, we organized this procession, and I think that through the procession, which was really interesting, is a lot of people really started to follow. And then as they followed, they were brought back to our museum. So even if they might not have understood when they were in the plaza that this was part of MOCNA, I hope by the end of it that they did. And I think it's really important to have all kinds of forms of engagement, because certainly song, dance, ceremony have always been part of our practices, and they are also part of the work of contemporary artists too. And importantly, within that ceremony, there was the figure of the trickster, which was an artist named Raven Chacon, who was dressed as a bush, quite deceivingly, in fact. And that bush tried to get his way into various restaurants. He got a ride in a rickshaw. He was on the grounds of the cathedral. And it made me realize how important that figure is and how important humor is, and no matter what we do.
Definitely. I think my favorite was when he was harassing his own mom, and she didn't even know that he was playing the role of the bush.
Right.
Well, there's always a lot going on there at the museum. And Candace, as we continue to learn more about other places around Native America, any hashtags you want to throw out there, or, you know, places where people can connect with the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts?
Well, there's a lot of different ways to connect with us. We're always listing our public programs on our website, which is at www.iaia.edu/museum. And if you go on that, there's a news section that you can check out. We're also active on Twitter as well as on Facebook. You can like us at Museum Contemporary Native Arts. And also what's great about the Facebook and Twitter sites is that you can get a kind of behind-the-scenes look. And it's also a place where more people can engage and respond. In the near future, we'll also be putting more videos up on our YouTube site at public programs. And I also wanted to mention that during Indian Market, of course, we had a number of public programs. One that was packed to the hilts was a conversation with LaDonna Harris on the occasion of the documentary done about her life called Indian 101. And that's been screening at the museum since August 21st and will continue until December.
Wow, there's a lot in that film, too. You guys are always on top of things, and we appreciate you sharing with us today here on Native America Calling. Candace Hopkins, thank you for your time today with us. And we're going to continue to learn more about museums and why they're opening their doors to the public. You can also participate today, too, by calling in. Maybe you have a photo that you want to share, and it says it all. Well, please do send it to us. You can even tweet it. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We want to see what's going on. And let's go ahead now. We're going to jump over to Santa Rosa, California. We have Nikki Myers on the line, and she is the executive director of the California Indian Museum and Cultural Center. It's our pleasure to welcome her to the hour. Hello, Nikki.
Hello. Thanks for having me this morning.
Hi, Nikki. Thank you for being with us. And Nikki, where are you currently today? Are you in your office, or do you have the pleasure of standing somewhere in an exhibit?
I am actually, I haven't made my way to the office, so I'm at home. But we're located about 60 miles north of San Francisco, and it's Pomo and Miwok territory, but most of the rest of the world knows it as wine country. So we have a lot of tourism that comes around, and our museum gives people the opportunity to learn about our native cultures in this area.
Thanks. And Nikki, much like I asked Candace, you know, the importance of making sure the community is connected to these different museums, you know, what do you get excited about the way the museum is connecting community with culture?
Well, one of my motivations, and I started out my museum journey probably not the normal route. I started through law school, and so a big part of what I do is advocacy, and advocacy for changing the way that California Indians are represented in, you know, in state education, in the media. And growing up in this county, there wasn't really a place that, as a child, you could go to reach out to learn more about your history and your culture. And so having creating the museum for that purpose, it gave us an opportunity to do that for kids in our community. And we have a Tribal Youth Ambassadors program that works really closely with museum staff on developing programs. And they go out and do public speaking in schools. They've done performances at the local theater for 1,600 youth. They do YouTube videos. So they really get a chance to not only work with the information, but find an outlet in order to transfer that information out to the larger community.
Wow, that sounds exciting. And maybe there's people in the listening audience who have a young person in their life that, you know, they think they'd be good for this program. You know, how do folks get involved with that?
You just have to contact us at the museum where our website is www.cimcc.org and email is cimandcc@aol.com. You can always call us 707-579-3004, and any of our staff can help you connect to the youth group in the program.
Sounds great. And Nikki, tell us a little bit about what we find when we do go to the museum or what's coming up.
Sure. We have a permanent exhibit called Ishii, Story of Dignity, Hope, and Courage. And that has been at the museum since 2009. And we created it because we do a lot of education with fourth grade. In California, it's mandated that fourth graders learn California Indian history. It's really not a level that you can do the story of our history any justice because there's a lot of tragic information that's not included in the dialogue about what happened to California Indians. And so Ishii's story really represents how he survived during the turn of the century from 1860 to 1916 and really looking at, you know, how he lived in hiding during 30 years of his life and how that was a means of survival during the Gold Rush era. He goes on to tell his story at his death about repatriation and how his brain was sent to the system.
All right. And Nikki, you know what? I'm having a really hard time with your phone line. Let's see if maybe we can wiggle that line and get a clearer connection because I know there's a lot of great things going on there at the museum. And today, if you just tuned in, well, you found a great program. It's called Native America Calling. And every weekday, we open up our phone line so that you can connect to people who are doing great things in Native America, as well as news that's connected to our tribal nations. And if at any time you would like to reach out to us, tell us what's on your mind, or maybe you want to hear a past program, visit our website, nativeamericacalling.com. Our email address is also comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And of course, we are on Twitter. Our handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you can also find us on Facebook. And today, you know, as summer wraps up, maybe your kids are back in school. And this is the time that you reserve to finally get to a museum and learn a little bit more about another space in our world. Well, if that's your thing and there's an exhibit that you are looking forward to, please do call in and tell us about it. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you can also critique some of the exhibits that you've gone to in the past. Maybe there's a couple of more things you'd like to see on display or information that you'd also like to be shared as people open up the doors to educating the masses. You can call us right now. Phone lines are open. Tell us about it. 1-800-996-2848. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we will be right here waiting for your calls. Porn addiction impacts the lives of many people in the U.S., including our tribal nations. On the next hour of Native America Calling, we'll hear more about the way porn addiction is affecting healthy relationships. We hope you can join us for this health conversation right here on our electronic talking circle.
When you don't speak your language, when you don't think in your mind is messed up. When you're down, when you're down, rebel against the violence, rebel.
bury the book in the regression. Raise our voices, let our story.
Support by Humboldt State University's part-time online Master of Social Work. The 3.5-year program focuses on decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted August 1st to 31st for a January start at humboldt.edu/socialwork.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and thank you for joining us today. We are talking about Native museums, also their importance to the public. And is there something you want to add to our conversation? Well, we are inviting you to do it. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. And have you ever gone to a museum and wondered how they put together an exhibit or found interesting facts? We also want to hear from you. 1-800-99-NATIVE, again, is our number. And if there are any folks out there who put the exhibits together, what kind of considerations do you take when you're working with different items or introducing the world to our Native nations? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. And finally, what about on your home front? Does your tribe have a museum that you'd like to get to sometime soon? What would you like to have included in the story that they're telling? Call us, tell us. 1-800-99-NATIVE is the number. And I'd like to go ahead and welcome back our guest. Joining us today from Santa Rosa, California, is Nikki Myers, and she is the Executive Director of the California Indian Museum and Cultural Center. Welcome back, Nikki.
Thank you.
And Nikki,
yeah, we were talking about the Ishi exhibit.
Sure, go ahead and continue.
We have another exhibit as well called Precious Cargo. And that exhibit just got done traveling around the state for about 7 years, but it's back at our museum now and open. And it is on cradle baskets. So it represents cradle baskets and childbirth traditions from tribes throughout the state. And here in California, we have 109 federally recognized tribes, but we also have, you know, if we added in unrecognized tribes as well, we'd be looking at over 150 tribes. So it really shows the diversity of tradition, and it's a really beautiful exhibit.
And Nikki, go ahead and give out the contact information, you know, if folks want to connect with you and maybe even get to some of what you've shared with us.
Sure. We're at www.cimcc.org. And then you can email us at cimandcc@aol.com. And our phone number is 707-579-3004. And also, because I know that this show is directed towards all Native museums, there's we participate and support a Tribal Museums Institute that happens every spring at UC Berkeley through the Joe Meyer Center for Native American Issues, and it's a one-week training for museum professionals. It's usually free of charge, and then you can just come out and spend the week learning various things, everything from fundraising to collections care to multimedia exhibit development. It's a great experience.
And Nikki, for curious minds out there, you know, who wonder, you know, how do these museums come up with their exhibits and, you know, what does it take to put it all on? Clue us into a little bit of that process. Go ahead, Nikki.
Sure. You know, it always starts with an idea, and then it's about implementing that idea. And that usually takes a lot of hard work and fundraising. Ishi telling his story was really important to us because children who came into the museum knew his story but really didn't have a sense of his story from a Native perspective. And so we wanted to be able to enrich that story and kind of reframe his legacy of who he was as a person rather than a study of anthropology or an object. You know, he's been kind of objectified by that study. We also have a website that tells the story of California missions from a Native perspective, and that took a lot of evaluating existing curricula and determining the messages that we wanted to overcome. You know, we get a lot of loaded words in the curricula about how Indians joined the missions or wandered to the missions for food, shelter, and clothing, and things like that really discount the traditions and lifeways that we had that preexisted that. So we want to be able to tell that story in a different way. We have a new exhibit that we're in the midst of creating, and it's called California Indigenous. And it really works with the way that fourth graders learn California Indian history. They usually learn it in geographic regions of California. And so with that exhibit, we've actually been working on it for 2 years, and our Tribal Youth Ambassadors group created the exhibit, and they worked and learned GIS, Geographic Information System technology, and they went and created maps and provided layers, putting oral history, 100 California Indians you should know, tribal headquarters. So they're creating a database that's a touchscreen exhibit that kids can go in and pull up specific regions of California and learn about the tribes.
Wow, I'd like to see some of that. Well, Nikki, we do appreciate you sharing with us today. How about a phone number? Where can people connect to you via phone?
We're at 707-579-3004.
All right. Well, Nikki Myers, thank you very much for telling us a little bit about what's going down at the California Indian Museum and Cultural Center. And folks, I also want to remind you that we do archive our programs. So if there is something you heard on today's show that you wanted to tell someone about, well, send them the link. You can find us at NativeAmericaCalling.com and get an archive of today's program as well. Thank you, Nikki Myers. And now we're going to jump to New York City, New York. And on the line with us today is Kathleen Ash Milby, and she is a curator for the National Museum of the American Indian, and she is from the Navajo Nation. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Kathleen.
Hi, Tara. It's great to be back.
Great to have you on the line. And Kathleen, it was a pleasure to also see you in our part of Native America. And Kathleen, before we get into what is going on at the museum, you had the privilege of being a part of a panel, The State of Native Art, recently at the Santa Fe Indian Market in conjunction with the museum. And so, you know, we weren't able to be a fly on the wall at that important discussion. Are there any highlights you'd like to share about what, you know, folks around the country think about the state of Native art?
Well, the State of the Art Symposium is always an opportunity for people who work in museums and work in the field to get together and talk about what's going on, what current issues are. A lot of times the panel is organized with people like museum directors, but this year the organizer was David Penny, who's the Associate Director of Museum Scholarship at NMAI, and he decided that he wanted to hear from curators this year. And the subject that he really wanted to address was the idea of common ground and what is the common ground that museums and curators can use to bring together the audience and presenting contemporary Native art.
And so,
For that, go ahead.
What were, you know, some of the things that, that really got the discussion heated or exciting?
Well, we had a nice panel. We had curators from several museums, myself, Christina Burke from the Philbrook Museum, Candace Hopkins, who we just heard from the Museum of Contemporary Native Art, Scott Shoemaker from the Eideldrick Museum. We had a lively discussion. I think that what we really were talking about is how each of us as individual curators and as institutions have tried to position contemporary Native American art in a way that really reaches the visitor. I don't know that there was any sort of contentious discussion or anything like that, but it was really interesting to hear about how other museums have addressed contemporary Native art depending on their audience and the context that they're showing it in. We're each dealing with a different type of audience and a different type of institutional history. So, for instance, the Philbrook is really looking at a long history with Native American art that started with a competition called the Philbrook Annual. And that's really how they built their collection. And, you know, so they're really putting their work within the context of that history. Whereas where I work, the National Museum of the American Indian, we're on a much larger stage. We're not talking just to the region where our two museum locations are. We're really talking to a national and an international audience. So our motivation in creating new exhibitions about contemporary Native art in some ways is much broader. We're trying to highlight the best of what's happening in Native America in contemporary art. And that means for us, since it's not a one-time thing, these are not permanent installations, we have the opportunity and the privilege of addressing Native American art from a lot of different angles. So as individual artist surveys, thematic exhibitions, we're looking at traditional and contemporary art. So we have a lot of options to work with.
And Kathleen, when you do think about, you know, inviting the public to a contemporary look at our Native nations, you know, what kind of words do you use to let people know, you know, that, A, we're still alive, and these are interpretations of maybe what's going on right now, or maybe interpretations of our history? You know, how do you explain this to viewers?
I think that what we're trying to do is figure out what that common ground, I think, is what you're really referring to. Like, what are those words and those phrases and those things that people can relate to and feel like they have a connection to and feel like they can reach some sort of understanding? Because if something seems too different or too foreign, that can sometimes be off-putting. At the same time, you know, we want to tell our stories. We want Native artists to be able to show their work and show what they're doing. So we have to reach that balance. So definitely, I think that, you know, being very clear about what the exhibition is about and using very descriptive words is really important. So people feel like, okay, there's a way for me to enter into this discussion, and there's something really interesting that I want to learn about.
And ultimately, you know, you want people to walk away with, you know, something that maybe they're even teaching others in their circle about it, you know, when it comes to our stories as Native nations. Well, Kathleen, thank you for, you know, giving us a view into that discussion. And now take us to the museum. You have something really exciting coming up in November. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, you know, we have two locations. Most people know this. We have, but for those of you who don't, we have an exhibition facility, a museum in New York City, which is where I'm based. But we also, of course, have our flagship museum on the Washington Mall. And this November, I'm going to be working with my co-curator, David Penny, to open an exhibition titled K. Walking Stick, An American Artist. This is a very large retrospective of the Cherokee artist Kay Walking Stick, and is going to walk visitors through her career starting in the late 60s to the present. We're really excited about this exhibition. It's a major contemporary art exhibition for Washington, and it's been a few years since we've had one of those. We're going to start the exhibition off with a symposium on November 5th. And that is free and open to the public. We have 9 speakers from various different perspectives who will be talking about Kay's work. The symposium is actually titled Seizing the Sky, Redefining American Art, and is going to be talking about her work within the context of American art, because Native artists often have this challenge of, you know, wanting to identify as Native artists, but they also want to be identified as contemporary artists and people who are part of a bigger art scene. And this is something that Kay has addressed off and on throughout her career, and we're really trying to contextualize her work within that American art framework. So that will be a big focus of what we're doing with the symposium and what we've done with the exhibition. And there's the beautiful book that is coming out as well that has, I think we have over 10 authors. It's a really beautiful publication that's going to survey her work across her whole career.
And Kathleen, you know, we're on radio right now, so help us with the visual. You know, what do we see when we do walk through the creations of Kay?
Well, most people know Kay Walkingstick as a landscape painter. They also know her work with diptychs. And a diptych is basically a two-part painting. So you might say two paintings side by side that make a whole. She was very engaged with abstraction early in her career. One of her iconic works that a lot of people know is called the Chief Joseph series, which is actually a very abstract work of 36 panels of very simple geometric forms. It's a very black painting, like literally. She uses a lot of black in it. She uses a lot of heavy encaustic and layered technique with a lot of scraping, and it's really visually rich, but very geometric and abstract. And then she moves later in her career into these very sensuous landscapes. She's held on to her interest in geometry and abstraction, and that's why the diptych format has worked so well for her. So one side will be a geometric form, and the other side will be a much more realistic and rich, beautiful landscape.
And Kathleen, what were some of the themes, you know, in this work? You really helped us get, you know, kind of a visual of what she likes to focus in on. But what about the subject matter or the statements you feel she's making through her work?
Well, it really is almost like, because it's a retrospective, one thing that we found is that artists tend to work on particular themes or ideas for a certain period of time before they move on to something else. So in a way, a retrospective of this nature is composed of multiple themes, right? Multiple chapters in the person's life and in the person's art. So one of the early chapters in her work is really about the body and about the sensuousness of the body, and a really interesting dynamic that she's looking at as a young woman artist in the 70s when, women's lib and feminism, and there was a lot of attention on sexuality and women's sexuality. And her work definitely reflects that era. Then when she goes to graduate school in the later 70s, she really becomes interested in minimalism, you know, looking at art in a very different way and thinking about paintings as not just a tool to create an illusion, like a picture, but as objects themselves. And that's where she gets very into the geometry and the material qualities of the work and the paint, and the works are very sculptural and very, very different from her earlier work. And then, of course, later then she's also becomes much more interested in her own heritage and in bigger issues in Native America and Native American history, particularly with the American Indian Movement, which is very influential on her. So she's exploring different narratives, and eventually she begins exploring those narratives through specific places. So a lot of her landscapes are focused on places where important historic Native American events took place. For instance, returning to the trail that Chief Joseph went on through Oregon and Washington, and visiting those sites, learning about events that happened there, and depicting those sites through that lens as a landscape. So there's an awful lot there. It's hard to summarize it. There's a whole period of her life where she spent a lot of time in Italy as well, and was heavily influenced by work from the Renaissance, and you see that reflected as well as another sort of layer to her work.
Wow, it sounds like a very exciting journey that she's taken you through with the art. And Kathleen, again, if you just tuned in today, this is Native America Calling, and we are hearing what's taking place at museums around Native America. On the line with us today is Kathleen Ash Milby, and she is a curator for the National Museum of the American Indian, and she is telling us about an upcoming exhibit featuring the work of Kay Walkingstick. And Kathleen, let's give folks a little more of the specifics, you know, when it's all taking place, and of course, a source they can go to if they have more questions.
Sure. For the Kay Walkingstick exhibition, and all of our upcoming exhibitions, you can go to www.americanindian.si.edu. and look at our exhibitions, our current exhibitions here in New York and in Washington, and our upcoming exhibitions in both locations. You can find us on Facebook, of course, and you can also find us on Twitter at Smithsonian NMAI, and also for New York specifically at AmeriIndian NYC. Can I just also mention we have another exciting exhibition that will be coming up soon in New York. It's titled Unbound, Narrative Art of the Plains. And it is a really interesting exhibition, and this is sort of a different look at contemporary Native art, looking at more of the traditional, starting with historic narrative art traditions of the Great Plains and leading us through contemporary Native artists who are using these same narrative art traditions, such as ledger drawing, works on muslin and hide. It's a really interesting counterpoint to something like Kay Walking Stick. And that exhibition is opening in New York March 12th.
Ah, definitely something to put on the calendar early as we get ready for spring. And Kathleen, it has been a pleasure hearing more about what the museum has in store for us this fall season and what's around the corner in the spring, too. Kathleen, thank you for being with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And there you go, folks. We took you to New York, Washington, D.C., California, and also Santa Fe, New Mexico. We have one more stop we're going to take you to. We're going to move over now to Phoenix, Arizona. On the line with us is Deb Krall, and she is the Senior Communications Manager for the Heard Museum. And Deb is from the Halon Salinan Tribe. Thank you for joining us. Welcome back, Deb.
Hi, Tara. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, getting there. And Deb, thank you for being with us. And we know the Heard is known for, you know, really helping to educate people about our Native nations. What are you excited about that rests in the walls or will be in the walls of the Heard?
Well, I guess you may have heard that we've recently adopted a new mission statement that our core, of course, is still and will always be Native peoples, Indigenous peoples of the Americas. But we know here at the Heard that we as Indian people have never existed in a vacuum. We have always engaged with other people who've come through and settled and become our neighbors. And so our new mission statement says that we are going to educate people not just about the Indigenous peoples, but about other cultures who live here in the Southwest. And in that note, we are starting this off with a bang because on October 31st, we are opening up a new exhibit called Frida Kahlo, Her Photos. And we all know Frida Kahlo was the legendary Mexican artist, lived in the 20th century. A lot of people also know that Frida, you know, had a lot of Indigenous ties through her mother's line. So we're really excited. These are photos from her personal collection. As we all know, in a few years ago, on the 50th anniversary of her passing, they finally opened up her closets. And out of the closets came thousands and thousands of photos, and 241 of them are going to be on exhibit here. So it's a really, really great look into the mind and heart of one of the most intriguing artists of the 20th century and one of the most intriguing artists ever.
Wow, that's exciting. And I know that Frida has definitely influenced many people from different tribal nations too, you know, not only through the art, but also their writing and, you know, encouragement that they took even from her own quote. So that sounds pretty exciting there, Deb. And, you know, and I know you like to make sure that people are connecting with our Native nations in ways that maybe they haven't thought of before or were surprised to learn. And right now, one of the displays that I'm interested in also hearing about, it's called Beautiful Games, American Indian Sport and Art. What is that about?
Well, what that's about is an examination of how sports have always been part of our many cultures, far back into the past and and right here in the present and looking forward into the future, how people connect through sports, how Indian people strengthen themselves through sports, how we use that in not only our daily lives but in a way to resist assimilation, a way to engage with other peoples. It's a really exciting exhibit, and I'm going to be really sad when it closes in late November, but it has been, it's just been one of our most popular exhibits ever.
And Deb, what do people see when they come to this exhibit?
What they're going to see is, first of all, they're going to see some of the really old ancestral sports that we would engage in, including the ball games, including traditional gaming. You know, we've got some gambling trays in there. We've got some old balls from ball courts, and we've got hand games. We've got bows and arrows. But then it moves into post-contact era sports such as lacrosse that have become part of the mainstream, as we all know, originated in the Northeast. We have a big examination of that. Running has always been part of our many cultures and part of our sports, and we've got Louis Tawanima, we've got Billy Mills, of course. He came to our opening, and he's just the most wonderful man ever. We've got other sports that people don't normally associate Indian people with, like boxing and even rodeo. I mean, here in our community, we know how big rodeo is, but it's been a good thing to educate the general public about some of the first cowboys were really Indians.
And Deb, I'm sorry, we are at the end of the hour. Please do. I know there's more to learn there at the Herd. A phone number where people can reach you.
602-252-8840 or herd.org.
All right. Sounds good. Deb, thank you very much. Always great things going on there at the Herd, and a couple of more exhibits that are going to be wrapping up this fall as well there at the Herd. Lolama Expressions in Metal, Ink, and Clay, as well as Time Exposures. If you have a chance and are more curious, please do give them a ring. And thank you for joining us today here on Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. We will be back again tomorrow. And please do visit us online, NativeAmericaCalling.com.
This program supported by the Peace Corps, the government agency sending thousands of volunteers to live and work alongside people in more than 60 countries worldwide. The Peace Corps will allow you to share your unique cultural heritage and promote world peace and friendship. We have rewarding work opportunities around the world in education, health, agriculture, environment, and business. It will change your life and the lives of others. More information available at peacecorps.gov. That's peacecorps.gov. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at hobbsstrauss.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.